Hi, everyone. Welcome to Academics of PA. I am excited to be back with two special guests to talk about early career academics. Being early in your career in academics, that makes more sense. So happy to welcome Anna Maria Demond and Juniper Katz, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves to get started. Anna?
Thank you so much. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Anna Maria Demond. I am an assistant professor of public policy and administration in the School of Public Service at Boise State University. I just received my PhD in public affairs and a graduate certificate in public finance, procurement, and contract management from Florida International University in Miami. So I recently moved to Boise from Miami. I research issues related to public management, generally, and public policy. And specifically, I'm very excited to look into government contracting, collaborative governance, issues related to innovation, sustainability, and environmental policy. And further in our podcast, I'm going to tell you why I'm excited to research this thing. So just keep on with us. Thank you. So I'm going to pass on to Juniper for her to introduce herself as well.
Hi, everyone. I'm so pleased to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Josie. So I'm Juniper Katz. I am also a new assistant professor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. I also moved from Colorado to Massachusetts during the pandemic this past June. I graduated from the School of Public Affairs at the University of Colorado, Denver, and didn't get to do the whole graduation thing because of the pandemic, but well, we'll get into all the juicy details about life as a new assistant professor during a pandemic, but I'm so pleased to be here. My research focuses on two areas. The first are topics related to nonprofit financial management, and that is an interest that is born out of my experience working at nonprofits and leading a small nonprofit for a while. And then my other interest is in land conservation and conservation policy implementation, policy feedback. So I research topics related to how government and nonprofit organizations and citizens mutually constitute and deliver public value through policy. I think that's about it for now. We can just dive into questions, or how's that sound, Josie?
Thank you both so much. You're both so professional. I'm really going to have to step up my game. I thought I was going to hang out, and now y'all sound like you're prepared. I love that. Thank you. And I will try to be some version of myself that's not too bad. Well, again, we really appreciate you both being here in the sort of arc of this podcast. We have had some interviews where we talk about, so senior scholars reflect on how to be a good early career academic and particularly how to survive the job market. So now I'm really excited to hear from you all about the current job market and how you did survive it and what I think a lot of us can learn from your experiences about how to do that better. But before we jump into those juicy details, as you said, Juniper, you started both to talk a little bit about why you chose to pursue a PhD in public administration, and I'm interested in learning a little bit more. Let's go in reverse order. How about Juniper? Can you start for us?
Sure. So I can say that when I decided to pursue a PhD, I can tell you I did not understand what that meant, which is perhaps a good thing. But what I did know is that I love to learn. I've always been an extremely curious person. I believed that I would enjoy teaching, and I do. And most of all, I was excited about the freedom of an academic post. I had this perception that being in academia was kind of like the best of both worlds. You have this enormous institution behind you that's got resources and administrative capacity. And yet, as an academic, you have freedom to decide your schedule, pursue the things that interest you, that sort of thing. So I thought it would be a good fit for me. And I believed that ultimately I could do more for the world and in the world in my tiny way than I could in the kind of narrower field that I had been in. And as much as conservation and land and ecology and wildlife and all those things that I've done matter to me, you know, I felt this little bit of a kind of narrowing as I was moving up the career ladder in my prior field. So I saw getting my PhD in public administration as a really good fit for the lived experience I already had, and also my intellectual and career goals. So a lot of people, well, a few people thought I was making a big mistake. People, you know, practitioners that I talked to prior to entering the PhD program, and they saw it as kind of a dead end and not relevant to the real world. And I think there are challenges translating research into useful information. But this is the real world too, right? We are doing public service. We are teaching and producing research. So in any event, I'm really glad. I am so, so glad I chose to get my PhD, and in this field in particular, for sure. You know, I don't have an MPA degree. So I actually came in, you know, not knowing who Weber was. In fact, I call him a Weber for the first year and nobody corrected me. so I didn't have the same.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, everyone makes that mistake now.
Well, not my colleagues who, you know, already knew who Weber was. In any event, I'll stop there, but I'm really quite pleased that I did pursue it.
That's really exciting. And I think we've tried to explore the importance of a field, this field in particular, providing relevant information. And is the PhD really the best place to do that? So I understand both sides of that for sure. Anna, how'd you come to the field?
Oh, I have a good story, and I'm just laughing. Juniper, I don't have an MPA either, and imagine myself as an international student coming from the work field. I worked after law school for several years, so I came into the PhD. I didn't know what to expect, and oh boy, you know, Weber was the least of my problems. So for me, as I said, I have a legal background, and after law school, I started working for a central government organization in Bucharest, Romania. I am Romanian originally. So the organization is called the National Trade Register Office. So I worked there starting in the legal department. And I remember when I started, they asked me if I wanted to work on procurement. I really did not know what that entailed, but I'm always, yes, of course I'm going to do it. Super excited about it. But it was something that people really did not want to work on, as you know, you've seen in research, even it is not really a well-researched topic, even though I feel that it's very important. So there is a lack of, not interest, I guess, but spotlight, right, I would say, for practice and research as well. So I started working in procurement. Procurement is the act of purchasing goods and services for the government, just as an I wanted to provide a definition for procurement to guide our conversation moving forward. Yeah, I know I'm kind of a nerd. I know how it sounds. And as I said yes without even thinking twice. And I think it was the best professional decision I ever made. It was really exciting because it is very challenging and not there is no same thing that you have to do every day. So every day is challenging and exciting, even though we kind of have to deal with buying the same goods and services every time, but the procurement process sometimes is different. So at one point, I decided that I want to take my career, my passion for government contracting, to the next level. So then I decided to pursue a PhD in public affairs. And my family lives in the United States. So I applied to FIU because it was close to where they lived after hearing, you know, great things about the program there. And it was the only place I applied to, and I am very, very happy with my choice. I was very lucky and honored that they accepted me into the program. And I really wanted to go into a PhD in public administration, one, because I wanted to use the experience that I already had and research public procurement, public administration topics, and I wanted to influence the field. And also to influence the students, right, and to make sure that they are better prepared for the real world and dealing with public procurement policy.
So both of you came from the practical side, which is interesting. I don't actually, someone should do a survey of the field. I would like to know how many folks come from the practical side versus straight into academics. How about your colleagues in your PhD programs? Were they large cohort, small cohort, similar interests, different interests? Just kind of curious.
For my part, the program at University of Colorado Denver is, I would say, medium-sized maybe. I think there were 10 of us maybe in the original cohort. And it was a combination of people like myself who were kind of mid-career, who had, you know, 10 or so years of experience in some applied work. And then there were a few, there was nobody, I don't think, okay, maybe there was two students who were kind of straight out of their master's degree program, still in their 20s. But most of us were somewhere in between, right? Varying levels of some career experience. And most of the people in my cohort graduated. A couple kind of transferred into a different program. One person left, I think 10 out of 12 or something like that completed. So that's pretty good, right?
Yeah, that's great. And at FIU, the situation was sort of the same as at University of Colorado Denver. The difference, I don't know, you didn't touch upon that, Juniper, so I'm just noticing that our department was really, really diverse, and I loved that. We used to have these potlucks where we would bring a dish from our culture, and it was so exciting, you know, a way to get to know each other, and also the food that we have. And actually, that was one of the things that helped me through the pandemic. I cooked all of those dishes, you know, getting recipes from my friends, and that helped me not being able to eat out at restaurants.
Can I just say, I really wish this interview was a potluck and that it would be nice to see the two of you in person again sometime soon, for sure.
Hopefully. I'm excited about that.
I mean, food is like 60% of my life. So yeah. In other words, like I spend a lot of time focusing on food.
Same. Is, you know, if I read as many books as I read menus, I'd be really smart. I don't actually like go anywhere or make anything. I just read the menu and think about how nice it would be to go there and eat that food. What would I get? It's a thought experiment as far as I'm concerned.
Soon,
that's it. Well, question that I didn't pose to either of you earlier, but interested. So you get to these great PhD programs and you're surrounded by really interesting people, and then you have to write a dissertation. I like to hear just a little bit about your process. Did you stay up all night? Did you work 8 to 5? Did it just flow easily, or was it a real challenge? What was that sort of last big push in the PhD program like for both of you? Anna, you want to go first?
Of course. Well, the dissertation writing process, I was lucky, and I now realize that I didn't touch upon this in your previous question, and I'm going to use this time to address that. So you asked about the interest of our colleagues, and I was very lucky to have Evelyn Rodriguez Plesha now, previous TRAML, with me from the onset of my PhD. So we started with the same research interest in government contracting. I had the international experience and she had the domestic experience, and together we really were kind of equipped with the skills to conduct research in this area. And our advisor, Dr. Arkadri, worked with us from our first year, to make sure that we develop a good dissertation idea. So we started, my dissertation was on green procurement and government collaboration. And we started from the first year on the topic of sustainable public procurement. And for the dissertation, we split the sustainability. I focused on the green aspect and Evelyn on the social equity one. So I think that that's where the dissertation process actually began. That's where we developed the idea. And everything that we have done from that point moving forward was towards the dissertation. So the first 2 years with classes, it was hectic, as you all know. After the comprehensive exams, when we had already the proposal, it was kind of difficult to move away from that structure that you have. And I think that it's something that everyone struggles with, to kind of move away from the structure of classes to your independence as a scholar. But again, we were lucky because we worked together as a team and we motivated each other to stay on track, and we were accountable to each other. So I think that really, really helped. I did not have a 9-to-5 program in the PhD. I worked as much as I could when I could. And I worked a lot. I pushed myself very, very hard to do a lot, to publish besides my dissertation, to network. I still am involved in several organizations. I like to know our community, to be involved and engaged. So I really pushed myself. Again, I did not have a 9-to-5, but I tried to exercise as much as I could to be able to have the strength to do everything that I really wanted to do. So I think that's it in a nutshell. But I think that having that collaboration with Evelyn really helped both of us to stay on track and not get overwhelmed.
Elena, you sound like a so put together person. I'm just unbelievably impressed. And hi, Evelyn. Juniper, how about you?
Yeah, so I guess I didn't address from your previous question the diversity of interests in my program, and it does relate to this question too. There was very diverse interests, and nobody in my cohort exactly shared my interests. However, I was hired as a research assistant when I got into the program, and the workshop on policy process research, WAPR for short, with professors Tanya Heikela and Chris Weibel. And it was there that I mean, they brought me right in. It was amazing, actually. I didn't even know about it when I applied to the program. And Chris and Tanya had gotten a really big grant. And at the time, they were... it was an NSF grant, Partnership in International Research and Education, I think it was called, PART. Anyway, I've got the acronym wrong. But what it meant practically was that I actually went to China for 5 weeks in my first, it was actually before the program began. It was the summer before the program began. We all went to China as part of an interdisciplinary research team with engineers and social scientists, looking at sustainable cities in China with a diverse team of people from all around the US and other parts of the world. And so that was my introduction. It was amazing, super fun experience. And then when I got back to the United States and started the program and worked in the lab, their lab, I got exposed to the sorts of techniques that Chris and Tanya use. And they, you know, they use policy process theories to study conflicts, policy conflict, mostly in natural resources areas. So fracking, water, organic farming. I mean, they've got a really diverse research agenda together and as separate scholars themselves. And so I had the benefit of kind of being exposed. I was also not working a 9-to-5 job. The lab was like a 20-hour per week commitment, but it was also so integrated with what I was learning. I think it would have been really hard. People in my program did have jobs. And I'm just so grateful for my husband, Zach Katz, supported us that whole time. Thanks, Zach. It would have been really tough to have done it without that support. So in terms of the dissertation development, one thing I did wrong or not as well as I could have is I sweated the details of the initial kind of plan. And I think I wasted a lot of time in that phase, because the fact of the matter is when you actually get into research, things change, right? And I was kind of trying to like set it up and know the answers before it was happening. And so I, you know, it took me like a year plus to develop the actual proposal. And then once the proposal was accepted, it seemed easy almost because I had sweated it so hard leading into it. But I guess the process, you know, because I had exposure to research design, I had already published a solo authored paper at that point with Chris and Tanya's support. So it was overwhelming. And I definitely, you know, 90% of the time I was like, oh, this is crap. And I still sometimes like feel that way. You're like, oh God, this could be so much better, right? But I think we're always the biggest critics of our own work. Everything can be better, right? So I did use mixed methods, which is very challenging. I mean, once I really got into doing the research, you learn about kind of trying to reconcile the philosophies that underlie quantitative and qualitative methods. You learn about that in class, but then when I was actually doing it, those different philosophies of knowledge actually are very hard to incorporate. So I'm glad that I did mixed methods, and I also collected my own data, which I'm very glad that I did as well. But those were big hauls, big loads for a new scholar to do. So yeah, that was my experience.
What great advice, right? Don't sweat the details. Plan is just as good as the paper it's written on. Once you get in there, lots of things change. And I think both of your experiences have so much to offer upcoming scholars in this field as well. So excited to hear about your process and what healthy processes, by the way. I just stayed up all night and drank. And you can tell on paper. It's obvious. okay, so you're getting through this dissertation process and you realize you are close to looking for a job, I assume, in academia. So, you know, how did you go about that application process? Did you know you wanted to go into academia? Where were you looking? Who was sharing information back with you? And then maybe some tips and tricks you think helped you when you were applying, sort of get the attention of the folks you wanted attention from.
Oh, yes. I have so many thoughts. And Juniper, you're right. I remembered. I forgot my dissertation already, but I did mixed methods too, and I gathered my own data as well. So I absolutely feel what you're explaining to everyone. So yeah. Regarding the job market process, it was a tough year. I think that for both of us last year, tough and interesting. And very happy to share my experience with all of you. But before I start, let me stress that it it is very, very, very important that you plan ahead. I think that's a very common theme that keeps popping up when I think about the PhD overall and the goals for the job market. Either whether you want to go the academic route or the practitioner route, I think it's very important to plan ahead because each roads need different type of preparation, different type of networks, different type of communities. But the common theme is start preparing early. I know that when you start a PhD, it's maybe the last thing that you're worrying about, most of all when you have all the classes and all the information being thrown at you. But please trust me on this, plan ahead. It's important, as I mentioned, to think about what your goals are, if possible, and it's okay to change your mind throughout the process. So after you know what your goals might be, trust me, focus on your goals. I was an international student. It was difficult, to adapt to the first year, thinking about the difference in language and culture and change in mind, in the mindset, right? I started as a practitioner and then I transitioned to academia. But as I mentioned, is doable. So for the academic route, I'm going to focus now on the academic route because this is what my experience is, right? So what I did what the advice was, just make sure you publish. If not with your advisor, try to publish with your peers, which is something that we also did, my team and I. Get teaching experience if your department allows to, because the job market has become more and more competitive, right? Go to conferences. I can't stress that enough. Try to find funding, apply for awards, fellowship, whatever funding there is available. Try to apply for it and grow your network, create a peer group, because I cannot stress the importance of the community enough to be able to get through this PhD and the job market as well. As I mentioned, I had a PhD sister, Evelyn. We help each other throughout the PhD as well as the job market. I think that sometimes we tend to be competitive with one another, but I think that it is very important to move away from that mindset towards a more collaborative approach, because the fruits of that collaboration is very, very important. And in terms of different resources, I want to say that Hannah Leibovitz and I created a list with tips and tricks and information, conferences, awards, podcasts like this one that you're listening to that could be useful for you. It's on my Twitter pinned. So on my Twitter is @AnnaDiemand, and you can find the list there. And I think that might be useful for you as a PhD student starting or, mid-career PhD student. That would be useful for you. In terms of where I looked for jobs, I created alerts on public service career, higher education, higher ed jobs. I think I use Twitter a lot for job postings. Our community shared postings with one another. Apply as early as you can. I don't know if all of you listening are familiar with the academic job market, but usually it starts around, August. For the next year, right? So for example, August 2021 now is the beginning of the job market for academic year 2022-2023. So apply as early as you can. Another tip that I found useful to manage the postings was that I created an Excel spreadsheet with all the listings and deadlines and the information that was needed for each of them. And I monitored that. It was easy to manage. And another thing that I didn't think about for your last year in a PhD? Plan ahead again, because it's an expensive year. There are a lot of costs, for example, for graduation that I didn't think about, like the regalia or moving expenses. Sometimes you have to pay upfront and the universities will reimburse you. If you're an international person, think about the cost with the OPT. That's another cost that you might be liable for. So I think these are some of the tips that I have. I mean, I don't want to take over the conversation because I know that I can talk a lot, but these are some of the things that I thought it would be interesting to share with all of you.
Oh my gosh, great tips. Just one follow-up. Would you have gone anywhere? I mean, as you're making your very organized Excel file of job application, job openings, were you targeting any certain aspects of the university or the program, or were you kind of like, and if you don't feel comfortable saying, that's fine too, were you, hey, anyone will take me?
That's a great question. Of course, I wanted to go in certain places, you know, where I could have a work-life balance environment. As I mentioned, I went to a lot of conferences, and I was familiar with different departments and different departments' environments. So generally, I would say I would have gone anywhere, but I did have preference for certain locations as well.
Great, thank you. Juniper?
Thanks, Anna Maria. You covered a lot of ground. I did all those things too. I have a spreadsheet. Sabawat Bichu, also an FIU graduate, she shared her spreadsheet with me and I built on that. And so, you know, you don't have to create the wheel, right? You can build on what other people have done. Yeah, I would have gone anywhere. Absolutely, right? I mean, the fear of God is put into us that there are so few jobs that I went into this job market thing as a second job. I treated it like a job. Finding a job was a full-time job. And I also believe that everywhere has something wonderful about it. And so I certainly had places that I preferred over others, but I would have, you know, if I had gotten one job offer, I would have gone to wherever that was. I was trying to remember the numbers. I think I applied to 17 positions, I want to say. And I think I got web interviews, like the preliminary interview, for like 7. And I think I was invited to 5, and that was a lot. That was a lot. It was a really hard year. There's so much about it. But I guess I would like to emphasize preparation, which Anna Maria referred to already. I read that book, The Professor Is In, by Karen Kelsky. I think that's her name. Her book, you know, I took the parts of it that resonated with me and left the rest. You don't have to treat it like a Bible, but her book helped me understand what was going on inside of hiring committees, just a lot of things that I didn't already know. I also practiced a lot. So I practiced my job talks. I practiced my web interviews. I spent a lot of time on the application packets, the 2-page cover letter, the CV, the teaching statement, the research statement, the diversity statement. I spent a lot of time. And one thing that I did, it kind of was just serendipitous or by luck, is that I had taught courses early, kind of relatively early in my program, because I had been an executive director of a nonprofit. The university felt okay having me teach when I was, you know, only in my second or third year in the program. So I decided not to teach in my final 2 years. And that actually freed me up to work on applying to positions. So for me, teaching early gave me the experience I needed to be able to put it on the CV. And then not teaching in that final year helped me apply to positions. Yeah, so practice, preparation really helped me feel confident going into those interviews. I also asked committees, what about my application got me in the door? And not everybody responded, but a number of them said it was the CV, which was interesting to me because I think I spent more energy on the cover letter. So I don't know if that's true of all committees, but just a bit of information for folks that some of the feedback I got was that the CV was like the first stop on the piles, right? They're going through 200 applications and they're putting them into maybe and no piles. The CV and the amount of preparation to make it easy for them to just get a sense for you, you know, right away.
Again, great tips. And thank you so much for sharing it. You know, it is very competitive. And so I think folks could get frustrated. Oh, I put out two applications and I didn't get any interviews. That's likely. And so it's from great scholars today that have made it. I think it's really important to share what you learned and that it is hard. So really appreciate it. And hi, Hannah. This is going to become the shout out show. but you know, it's so great too that you're both suggesting resources for other folks going through this process and networking. And that was a really important one too from my experience. So now you have the interview, and I think it might be interesting, especially now, I think we're going to be seeing a lot more phone interviews and Zoom interviews. So maybe a little bit about your experience with those. And then once you get on campus, what was that experience like for both of you?
Right. So as I mentioned, I did practice the Zoom interview in advance with somebody. I asked somebody to be the interview committee and I gave them questions. And I'm so glad I did because the Zoom interview is, well, we're all probably better at it now than we were a couple years ago because our lives have been on Zoom. But it can somehow feel nerve-wracking to be on a video call. I don't know what there is about it that is so, I don't know, it's like being on camera. So practice was the first thing I did. In terms of the campus visit, you know, I researched every single department I was visiting. So I looked at the faculty and the staff and tried to understand a bit about those folks, what their interests were, what they were teaching and researching. And I had spreadsheets with notes. I had trouble sleeping. I had terrible, terrible time sleeping on my interviews. In fact, I had one trip where I had two interviews that were back to back. So I didn't have a chance to go home. And that first night, I didn't sleep at all. And then the second night, I was still traveling. There was delays. It was 2:30 in the morning, and I was still on my way to that second interview. Needless to say, it was 3:30 by the time I checked into my hotel room. I did not sleep that night either. So I was going on two whole days of not sleeping, but I got that job. So the point there is you can do it, right? Like even if it seems like, oh, I'm having a meltdown, I'll never be able to perform if I'm low on sleep, you'd be amazed at what you can do. And I think the thing with the site visits is to just, you know, listen, do your homework, and try to soak in the atmosphere while you're there so that you have kind of something. So I would go home and back to the hotel room and take notes on my experience so that I would remember, you know, this is how it felt. This is who I met with. This is what we talked about, that sort of thing. Yeah. So that's just a little snippet. There's so much more, but that's a bit.
Oh, that's great, Juniper. Well, you made great points, and I'm going to try to add to them because you were very comprehensive. I want to add the fact that I really asked my peers, as I mentioned, for me, community is very important, and we help each other a lot, even now. So I shared the documents with my friends that were on the job market and made sure that I got their feedback, incorporated their feedback. My professors helped. We were all involved in this, right? Even for the interviews, for the Skype interviews, job talks, everybody was involved. We present in front of each other. We get feedback. This is wrong. This is good. You know, it was very, very helpful. So the community in which we were brought up as scholars was very, very supportive. And I have Juniper, you mentioned Sibawit and Andrea were very supportive of me and of Evelyn as well. So we were all in this together. Get feedback, don't be shy to ask, right, from individuals that you know. Ask for feedback because it's very important. Don't be shy. Please, please, please don't be shy. This is very, very important. That's for the Skype interview I did, as Juniper did. I took notes and it is very interesting. It was before COVID, right? So we were not used with Zoom as much, but it makes a difference, right? I see when I compare how I feel when I teach face to face, you know, the energy that you get from students. And then when you are on Zoom, it's a totally different thing, right? So it may be uncomfortable, but just plan for that too. And the advice Juniper gave y'all, I think it's very, very good. Just practice before to be able to feel comfortable in that role of seeing yourself. If you don't like to see yourself, you know, now you can minimize your camera and just see the person or persons that you're talking to, right? I know for me, it's weird to see myself. I really don't want to see myself when I talk. So I think that's for preparing for the flyouts. Yeah, Juniper, I feel you. I feel you. You know, I was very, very sick on the job market. So I had a cold. I think I have a ear and sinus infection. I was not hearing, or I didn't have a sense of smell. I was coughing all the time. I was so stressed. I was like, oh my God, I'm going like this on the job market, you know, talking to people. But it went well. And as you said, you don't really know what you're capable of until you're right there and you're doing it because you have to do it. So, I did, as Juniper said, I prepared ahead too. I did my research on each of the scholars involved in the process. I was present in our conversation. I asked questions. It's important to know that when you visit the campus, you're also looking, is this a place where I would see myself for the next years? Is this a place I will thrive as a scholar, right? So you're also interviewing them. You're not the only one being interviewed. So that's an important thing to have in mind. And something that I struggled with, right? I think that it's important for us to get out of the mindset of being a student or a PhD candidate and see yourself already as a scholar, as a professor, right? And have that attitude. So I think that's my addition to what Juniper said, because she was so good at talking about the process. I really think that I had like a...
Anna, I want to follow up on something you said. So you're applying for these jobs, you're getting called in, but you're not just, they're not just interviewing you, you are interviewing them. And that is kind of a different mindset, but I think it's really, really important because you are making what could be a very long-term choice. You both are. So anything that you did or you were looking for that helped you sort of indicate that, yes, this is a place I want to be?
That is a very good question. And I, in my decision-making process, I rely a lot on how I feel, right? If I feel comfortable, if I feel like myself, if I feel like I can be myself, right? And that's what I felt with the choice that I made. I really felt like myself. I felt like the conversation went so smoothly. You know, I know that I usually talk a lot and usually conversations go well, but just the feeling that I had, in the conversation, I felt comfortable. I felt supported. I felt like my research was a good fit for the department. It really left me with, yeah, of course, I want this. You know, I was excited after the interview, you know, so I just followed that gut. Maybe it's not a good advice, but that's what worked for me. So just being honest.
No, thank you. Juniper, anything that you saw that you were like, oh, this is absolutely the place for me, or no, this, I want to get out of here as fast as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I would have taken a job from any of the places that I got interviewed at for sure and been happy about it. But UMass felt completely right the moment I got here. And I couldn't believe that I was offered the job. I still am. I'm so psyched to be here, and the fit is good. I guess, how do you know that? I mean, my interactions were with people from the very first faculty member I sat down with. He arrived having actually read a paper of mine. He had questions prepared for me, and that was just felt amazing. I mean, he took so much time and care, and I made me feel important and like I mattered. So that was just one tiny thing. It was organized, and I don't know. It was just all of the little things added up to a big yes.
The it factor still to be explained. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we are starting to run out of time, but I want to ask one more question. And so both of you get the job, and then you transition into a tenure track job during COVID-19. And maybe that made it harder, or maybe just transitioning to a tenure track job is really difficult. So any advice for those folks making the same leap as you?
Oh, this was quite a year, and I don't think that this is, I hope we're going to get through this, and, you know, the ones that are going to start in the fall are not going to get the same experience. Well, for me, I'm just talking about the experience that I had. I think it helped to be structured. Again, I think that I talked about lists and structure and planning ahead. Everybody's going to think I'm such a planner, which I am, but I think it's important. So it helped that I planned. This year, it was difficult because we were not able to, you know, get engaged with our community as much. But I think that our school did such a great job of keeping each other connected with Zoom meetings and also happy hours via Zoom. I think that that was really helpful to feel that you are not alone, right? Because as in my case, I moved to a completely different city by myself. So it was challenging. So I guess for those listening to us, just prepare for that move. But again, I hope that's not going to be the case in the fall. But again, we don't know right now what the future holds. So I think just be patient, be kind to yourself. I think that starting a tenure track position is scary. But again, be kind to yourself. Plan ahead, make a plan for the 5 years on the tenure track, exercise, and think, yeah, that's overall it.
Yeah, agreed. I share those tips as well. I guess for me, I've been prioritizing writing and research in my first year. So for example, I attend a twice weekly writing accountability group online, of course, where they're just people from across the university who want to commit to writing and research. It's just an hour, twice a week, but it helps keep me focused. And that doesn't mean that I'm not giving my attention to teaching, because I am. But trust me, teaching could eat up the whole world if I let it. And so my focus has really been on prioritizing writing and research and finding mechanisms to support that. I also made kind of a buddy who's a new assistant professor in the Department of Sociology. And we have weekly meetings where we set milestones together, small ones, like I'm going to write an abstract in the coming week, or I'm going to open up that paper that I hate and work on the introduction or whatever it is, right? And that's really helped me. And like Anna Maria said, I extend compassion to myself and others. I take naps when I'm tired. Like, what else do I have a job that has some flexibility for? And I'm also working from home. And I try not to go down teaching rabbit holes. I work hard to do a good job, but I don't let it rule my schedule. So I guess finally, I use kind of my reflective nature or process to keep making sure that I'm on the right path. You know, just I'm not a religious person, but in terms of just praying that my work remains focused on doing good in the world and that I, you know, stay true to those goals. And that just keeps me walking the path. You know what I mean? Yeah.
What a wonderful sentiment to end our conversation. I want to thank you both so much for this time, for the great insights, tips, tricks. And I'm lucky to know you both and a little bit better now. So thank you so much. And thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.